Support comes from the Norton Simon Museum. Celebrate the opening of I Saw It, Francisco de Goya Printmaker, with an evening of live music, art making, live model drawing, tours, and more. Saturday, April 20th from 4 to 6:30 p.m. Info at nortonsimon.org.
What happened the night Chicano student activist Oscar Gomez died?
There needs to be some rest. There needs to be some closure.
We follow the leads on Imperfect Paradise, The Forgotten Revolutionary, wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, it's Air Talk. I'm Larry Mantle. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday. We're joined today by LAPD Chief Michael Moore. Very good morning to you, Chief.
Good morning, Larry. Good to be on.
Thanks. Let's start first of all. President Biden today is making an address about rising violent crime across the country. He had already announced a number of executive actions on gun control, efforts to crack down on so-called ghost guns that can be created from parts and without a background check. He's expected to announce today a zero tolerance policy for gun dealers failing to comply with federal law. Do you see any of these having much impact on California, where, of course, the gun rules are much stricter than the federal ones?
Absolutely, I do. I just got a very multi-page briefing sheet that I'm reviewing. And over the 13 pages, what I'm encouraged by is not just the enforcement provisions, but it's other efforts of getting gang interventionists and intervention services to stop the retaliation and the retaliatory violence that we know exists in many of our communities that have seen this increase in violent crime, as well as a youth workforce development and then also supportive services for people coming back into our communities, where we've seen in this pandemic hundreds and thousands of people being released from state prison and other incarcerations, but there's no place for them to go. There's no supportive housing. There's no jobs for them. And what's happening is that many of them are returning to a life of violence. So I'm encouraged by the Biden-Harris bill or this announced executive plan. We look forward. LA was called out specifically that we would be receiving additional resources to support our local ATF office and task force configuration, working with the U.S. attorney, so that those that are carrying these guns and committing this gun violence receive the full measure of justice and full prosecution. So I think it's on balance. My initial take on this is it's well thought out, it's comprehensive, and it promises for Los Angeles additional resources, which are critically needed as we make our work is cut out for us to move forward in a manner that restores the safety of the city, the levels we saw prior to this pandemic.
Just given, though, the sheer volume of weapons that are in Los Angeles, is it very difficult for someone who's intent on illegally getting a weapon to do so? And how would this have any effect on that?
Well, the issue there is to look at the life of a gun and not just look at the individual carrying it. And so when you want to interrupt any type of criminal enterprise, is coming from it to not just take the low-hanging fruit or not just the fruits of that organization, but how do you disrupt it earlier in the supply chain? For instance, each one of these guns are made up of parts. And there are wholesalers, people who are making a substantial profit by selling these guns to people who would otherwise be prohibited by possessing them. So it's not just taking the individual who has the gun in their possession and holding them to account and criminally prosecuting them, but it's finding those gun purveyors and identifying them. And as you remove them from the equation and others see that there is a serious and meaningful consequence, federal time for 5, 10, 15 years is a significant deterrent for others to be engaged in essentially a business for profit. What's driving the manufacturing of these guns is people making the profit from these guns. And how to interrupt that is for there to be consequences for that. This effort will add to our ongoing efforts with both the district attorney as well as our city attorney that's been working to interrupt this issue of ghost guns in Los Angeles.
How does this relate to District Attorney Gascon's not using sentencing enhancements, additional charges, add-ons in the prosecution of cases? Is that happening, in fact, with gun-related cases where enhancements for that are not being added, or is that continuing in the county?
Well, I'm seeing a bit of unevenness. Some field reports I'm getting from my detectives is that we're seeing instances in which gun enhancements are filed, and we're seeing other instances in which they're not. And so I'm asking for more information as to that decision. You know, enhancements were passed by the people of California that are for specific crimes and circumstances that they believe the underlying punishment is not of enough of a deterrent value, so they enhance with added penalties, or the nature of the crime is such that society is telling to the victims, we're giving this enhancement above and beyond the standard sentence because we want to protect you. We want you to know that as a society, we view this as even more extreme than just the underlying offense of, say, a robbery. A robbery motivated by hate deserves a higher consequence, not just for deterrence and not just for punishment, but also to tell those victims that because we're not going to stand for instances of hate in anywhere in Los Angeles County, and if you engage in it and you commit a crime motivated by hate, that you'll be punished to the full extent of the law, including those enhancements. Same with the gun violence. We know the majority of our robberies are committed with bodily force. They're not committed with handguns. And when you use a handgun in a robbery, the potentiality for that being a lethal crime is increased by 100%. It's very seldom, if ever, is somebody robbed with bodily force in which any injury, let alone death, is a consequence. When you have a gun involved in that robbery, the potentiality for that robbery to result in someone's death is clearly there, and we see it. And then lastly, so gun violence here in Los Angeles, we need to work on it where we use the weight of the criminal justice system in concert with our community outreach and engagement and in concert with other services that can deter people from engaging in these types of crimes.
We're talking with LAPD Chief Michael Moore. If you have questions for him, you can tweet them at AirTalk. You can post on the AirTalk Facebook page or call 866-893-KPECC. Chief Moore, let's talk about what's happening with overall crime, number of categories where it's down year to date or 2 years to date to compare pre-pandemic to currently. However, we see homicides up over 2 years ago by 29%, the change there. We see motor vehicle theft making a significant jump, 42% over 2 years ago. Shots fired up are up considerably. Victims of gunfire up significantly. And the homicide rate is up 63% over 2 years ago. So, how is your department dealing with these areas where you are seeing significant increases?
So we believe that many of them are the direct result of just the absolute destruction of societal controls, systems, processes, programs that was brought out by this pandemic. Vehicles were probably the most striking matter of vehicle thefts that occurred with the onset of the pandemic. After a decade more of reduction in vehicle thefts, we saw for the first time last year vehicle thefts go up. We think that behavior was a result of opportunists that saw more vehicles, more access to vehicles, and used them for primarily transportation. They weren't commercialized, they weren't sold. The increase in violent crime took a little more time to manifest itself, but we also think that was a consequence of the turmoil in our communities, the fact that there was isolation, that the social systems had broken down, and there was a lack of interventionists and other helping hands, if you will, that would help soothe those disruptions, that violence in the street. But also, and critical to this, and certainly as we exit this pandemic, is recognizing what happened to the criminal justice system. Zero bail, the fact that people would be arrested for felonious assaults, for other felonies and would be released immediately, with a promise that they would come back to court 6 months later. And those court trials had been delayed even further. The lack of jury trials, and as we look at the level, a number of personnel, people that have been incarcerated, we've seen that those numbers have been reduced by the thousands.
Do we have stats on the number of people given zero bail released who then have committed subsequent crimes who would have previously been incarcerated? Do we have numbers to actually quantify what that increase, as you're citing it, has been?
So we're tracking that now each week. Approximately 3 weeks ago, the number was 20 to 25 people per week. We were being arrested for a new felony and had been arrested in the previous year for a similar felony and were out. We're awaiting trial in a community setting. What we know is that historically is that our jail systems have held people, more people, for pre-trial custody rather than the penalty portion after they've been convicted. And these have been serious offenses. Zero bail looked at all those offenses and essentially watered them down to only the most serious of violent offenses had a bail. Those other individuals are now back in the street, and what we've seen, I believe, is that the instances of not all of them, but a portion of them, continuing in their violence, continuing in their actions of preying upon others, and that's where we're seeing these numbers increase.
You said 20-something in a city the size of Los Angeles. I mean, obviously, that's 20-some violent incidents you don't want to have happen. But is that statistically significant given the size of Los Angeles?
Oh, absolutely. We have a city of Los Angeles that has 4 million people. And last year, we had 360 homicides. And we had 360 too many homicides. You can't look at the 4 million and say, well, it's less than 1% of 1%, and so that's allowable. That mentality of proportionality of, well, there's just going to be a certain core level of violence in the city of this size, we have to accept that. That is a recipe of apathy and doom. That's what has, in my view, in years past, allowed the city decades ago to experience 1,100 homicides in 1992 and not to have a public outcry until it reached a certain tipping point. What we're trying to alert today is that the violence we're seeing in 2021 are violence levels that we saw back in 2004, 5, and 2006. And over the last decade, through the investment in policing, through the investment in community engagement, through the investing in 21st century policing strategies and tactics, and that's not just enforcement-born, but intervention and prevention strategies that we were able to get as a city, all of us, the shared responsibility of public safety, to see crime levels drop to historic lows. January of 2020, we were remarking about crime levels in Los Angeles, violent crime levels, that you'd have to go back to the 60s to find.
Yeah.
We lost that. We lost all that in a year, and we ought to all be significantly concerned and worried, and warning bells should be going off to ensure that that is an anomaly and not a tipping point.
So what do you think? Do you think that a year from now we're going to see these elevated levels, or do you think we get back to where we were pre-pandemic?
I think there's no invisible hand here. Our safety is entirely dependent on the strategies we choose. We have to look at this in a clear-eyed fashion and recognize that people who are committing and shooting people in the streets are violent and serious offenders, and that we can't, and while we recognize that their life and their background may have led them to this point where they have these disastrous results, their continued presence in a community poses a risk for further violence and a further loss of life. And we have to be willing as a society to recognize that our society has failed in instances that have resulted in people that are preying upon others. But part of that conversation that needs to occur now is, as much as we want to be supportive and we want to successfully re-enter those individuals back into our society, and LAPD has led policing with diversion, both juveniles and just recently started with adults, and we want to see people be successful once they've paid their dues, if you will, for the crimes they've committed. We want to see them back successfully reoriented back into our society.
All right.
We have to also recognize, what have we changed in the last year and a half, and we have to, as we start exiting this pandemic, be willing to put some of those processes back in place because they do have a deterrent value and can help us get out of this as it is a blip and not a tipping point.
We're going to continue our conversation with LAPD Chief Michael Moore. We'll talk about homelessness. Venice Beach, of course, has been a source of tremendous concern with people living on the boardwalk. Residents are up in arms over it. There's been tremendous political fallout from this. We'll talk with Chief Moore also about what the sheriff of LA County, Sheriff Villanueva, has done with his deputies going out along with the crisis teams of the Sheriff's Department to talk to those that are on Venice Beach. If you have questions for the chief, we're at 866-893-KPCC. Back in 90 seconds. Earlier this month, L.A. County Sheriff Alex Villanueva went to Venice Beach. He said that the boardwalk would be cleared of unhoused residents. This catching people by surprise because, of course, Venice Beach is within the city of Los Angeles and the jurisdiction of the Los Angeles Police Department. Now, of course, it's also in L.A. County, so the sheriff and deputies certainly have the right to be in Venice Beach, but typically the practice is to cede that to LAPD officers when you're talking about the city of Los Angeles. The sheriff said that politicians had handcuffed the LAPD and that he had no choice but to take action. Chief Moore, your response to what your sheriff's department counterpart has done?
Well, I appreciate the fact that he's come to the boardwalk and with the promise of outreach and engagement, and also announced or discussed the fact that he will be taking enforcement action to involve the arrest of people camped out there overnight or camping during the day. City of Los Angeles, and I'm proud of the work our men and women are doing in that oceanfront walk area. It is an area that we've made more than 300 arrests over a six-week period of violent offenders, of people committing property crimes, and also people camping there overnight. What's been missing from the equation to this point has been sanitation services that pick up and take the unattended property, the unattended possessions that are left in those parks. So while we make enforcement efforts of a person that's in an encampment or in a tent in the park overnight, which is prohibited, it's clearly within our ability to take that enforcement action. And Councilman Bonin, who announced earlier that we have that authority, he's right. And yet what has been missing has been sanitation services to help rec and parks facilities remove the trash and the debris and also store the property of those that leave their belongings there unattended. It doesn't need to be an all or nothing matter in this, but what has been missing to this point has been when we have individuals who have refused to leave a park overnight and declined services, including housing, the only consequence they have right now is for us to make an arrest, issue a citation. We are prohibited by taking that property, and that property should be seized. It's an involuntary seizure because it is prohibited to have unattended property there, and sanitation and rec and parks should accomplish that. I'm hopeful. I spoke with Councilman Bonin just this morning to continue to encourage those city resources. As I've spoken with Mayor Garcetti, I know he's committed, and the mayor's office is committed to rallying whatever resources we can from sanitation to focus on this issue. What I think has been less productive is the number of deputies there and the symbolism of as if people are going to jail, that people are being arrested for who are homeless. And that's not been the case. The people that the sheriff has detailed there have made outreach and engagement. They've contacted 45, 50 people the last week or so and offered housing. He has committed to at some point in the future taking those offers of housing and supportive services and for those that decline it to make physical arrests. And again, to that, I would only ask that he bring sanitation services along and services so that those encampments are removed so that they're not simply reoccupied as soon as a person is released. These are misdemeanors, so the individuals are taken into custody or taken into custody for a minimal amount of time, sometimes hours, no more than a few days. And if the underlying encampments or structures are not removed, they're simply rehabilitated by either those same individuals or others.
So let me just clarify. So you want the right for your officers to be able to take into custody, to arrest people who do not accept shelter beds otherwise, and to clear them off the boardwalk. Is that correct?
We have that now, Larry. And we made nearly 200 citations on that very offense for people camping overnight on the Oceanfront Walk Park.
But you're not arresting them. It's a citation, right? So they can continue to stay.
It's a citation because if I arrest them, they're subject to be released by state law. They'd be released on their own recognizance. And so it's a zero bail. They come, and if I haven't, and if the tent or the structure hasn't been removed, they simply reoccupy it. So it doesn't... Do you understand the circle there? In other words, unless you take the structure away.
I understand.
Okay, so the person who take the structure are not police officers. The people who are responsible for that property is Rex and Park, Recreation Parks, and they rely upon Los Angeles Sanitation Services to make that seizure. And that is the missing link that needs to be persistent in this area. It was there prior to the pandemic. And because of the pandemic and its impact on the health and welfare of persons experiencing homelessness and others, there's a moratorium on the enforcement against daytime camping, and also a lack of resources to enforce sanitation resources to enforce the removal of unattended property from parklands. And from those two matters, we have seen the proliferation of encampments in our parks.
So if the tents were removed, if the possessions of the people living on the boardwalk were removed, you would then arrest?
Yes.
Okay. April in South Los Angeles writes on the page, Sheriff Villanueva has said that to those experiencing homelessness, pack up your bags, head back to the state that you came from. But her point is that that's not illegal for people to move freely around the country and to choose to live in Southern California, even in an encampment. And she asks, why did you choose to stand by and defend his threats to arrest otherwise law-abiding citizens?
Well, so first of all, I'm going to avoid the extremes on this issue, and I think that all of us would be better in the safety of Venice is to find some middle ground in talking with each other. People have the right to move around this country. It's American. It's one of the values of America. Tonight, I can get up if I want to be in Washington. It's just a matter of time and travel. I don't have to get approval from anyone. However, occupying public space, and I choose to go to Venice Beach, and I choose that Oceanfront Walk is my new domicile. I'm going to sit there. I'm going to lay there. I'm going to live there. The public that says this is public space, it's open to, and it should be open, accessible to everyone, and no one has the ability or should have the ability to decide, well, no, I'm going to appropriate this public space for my use and my use alone and interfere with the public's act, the other members of the public. We all have equal footing here. Now, having said that, people experiencing homelessness, those persons who are houseless, who don't have shelter, are resorting to public places to live, to sleep, to rest. From a humanitarian standpoint, I understand that, and I support it. And, however, where those public places are, also there should be some controls there so that the ability to find an open space without unduly interfering the rights of others to open space is a balancing act. And that's where Los Angeles Police Department, I'm proud of. We're not leading with law enforcement. We're not leading with arrests. What we're trying to do is balance the competing needs of everyone involved. Venice Boardwalk is a destination for the world to come and enjoy Southern California. There are people who have invested their entire livelihoods, multiple generations of their families.
Sure, but
and those being interfered with right now by others who say, but I have the right to sit in front on a stoop in front of your business and effectively interfere with your ability to go out and conduct your vision, your American dream of a livelihood that is productive and rewarding.
Let's turn our attention to Echo Park Lake, where the city, under the stated reason, at least, of doing a rehab of the park, removed all of the people that were residing in the park. Are people starting to move back into the park? And is the LAPD attempting to stop any individuals who want to pitch tents in the park?
So let me answer that the people that were removed from Echo Park, there was a great deal of outreach and engagement by Councilman O'Farrell's office. He contracted with an organization called Urban Alchemy to do for months to go out and meet people that were camping within that park and offer them supportive housing and assistance. Many of them took advantage of that. Then others came behind them. And over a course of time, the size of the number of people in the encampment was reduced. Ultimately, it fell down to 50, 75 individuals, sometimes as low as 30 overnight. And the decision was made, though, to repair the park, the damage that had been done to the infrastructure, because parks are not designed for camping, for long-term occupancy like that had happened there. And hundreds of thousands of dollars of damage had been done, and 35 tons of debris were inside. So the decision was to close the park by the city, not by the LAPD.
Right.
And LAP was asked to support Rexon Park with the safe closure of that park. And in reality, all the actions that took place over there, with exception of two arrests, were actions of LAPD protecting members of the city contractors that put in the fencing over the objection of advocates. The people that were in the park largely left once they realized the park was closed and it would be closed, and there was a firm line that this park would be closed at a certain time. They all, most of them, took advantage of the house.
I want to move forward on this. And so my question is, now that the park is reopened after the renovations, are officers going to tell people that they cannot pitch tents, and are they going to remove them forcibly from the park if they refuse to go?
So currently the park is fenced, and it has access points, and the Department of Rec and Parks and park rangers open and close the park each day, and people that are told they're not allowed to remain in the park overnight. And the Rec and Park are taking that enforcement posture, not requiring LAPD, which I'm grateful for. And I anticipate that moving forward, that Echo Park will remain available for everyone in the Echo Park community to enjoy, and overnight the park will remain free of camping. And the fence is enforcing that. You know, that's an aid, as well as Rec and Park rangers that are there to ensure that everyone leaves.
We'll continue with LAPD Chief Michael Moore. Coming up, we'll talk about the Brady List, which is required by law enforcement agencies to compile a list of problem officers who've been untruthful in certain accounts that they've given, so that could be considered in the prosecutions of cases involving those officers. We'll talk about the LAPD's policy on Brady when we continue in just 1 minute. LAPD Chief Michael Moore with us on Air Talk. Chief Moore, a spokesperson from your department said that LAPD does not have a Brady list of officers who've given problematic accounts, which have been shown to be false or deceptive, and that according to law have to be provided to defense attorneys, and that the department, according to the spokesperson, does not intend to create a Brady list. Can you explain the reason for that?
Sure. We don't need a list for our purposes. What we do is we're working with District Attorney Gascon and his staff, and in talking back and forth with them since February. They have provided us a list with every department member who is an active witness in any criminal trial. And they've asked us to identify those officers, and this number was nearly 7,000, to identify those officers who, by our review, preliminary review of their disciplinary history, has some type of sustained misconduct which would undermine their credibility, their integrity, their suitability of being a witness in a criminal proceeding. The district attorney has an obligation to identify those type of individuals to the court so that the court can look at that officer's underlying disciplinary history and determine, is there information here that should be released to the defense.
So have you provided those names to the DA, those Brady officers' names?
So we're in a process of doing that now. Half of those officers' names who were given us have no sustained misconduct in any fashion. The other half we're now going through and reviewing, and we are providing names of individuals who may have what's called exculpatory or problematic disciplinary history that the DA's office, working with the court, needs to determine whether it actually constitutes Brady material. And so I have a great relationship with the district attorney's office on this issue. I'm aware that other agencies are refusing or have declined to date to provide. We're working regularly in communication with them to provide names as we move forward.
How many names have been provided thus far or internally identified by the department?
I don't have that number for you.
Okay. LAPD Chief Michael Moore joining us on Air Talk. Let's talk about what's happened with the ongoing litigation over the department's response to the protests in the wake of the George Floyd murder last year. And the department has done a number of internal affairs investigations looking at uses of less lethal force as well as lethal force in cases with protesters. And of all these cases that have been looked at, what, there's just something like five who've been found subject to disciplinary action. So people who witnessed what they felt was serious overreaction and life-threatening action by your officers say, how can that possibly be in an objective investigation? Your response to that?
So we've established a Safer Los Angeles task force made up of Professional Standards Bureau, Internal Affairs investigators. We've made an initial report to the Board of Police Commissioners about a month ago that was just that, an initial report. We still have a number of investigations that have not yet been completed. We are committed to a follow-up report to the commission, which I expect at that time in September or October will be able to close out all of the investigations. What I need the public, and I'm asking the public to help me with, is that we have quite a few of these investigations in which two things have happened. One, the person who made the complaint will not provide a statement to us. They've referred us to their attorney, and the attorney of record or themselves have said, we'll see you in civil court. So we've been unable to interview them and gather facts and information to determine the guilt or innocence of the alleged misconduct. Did the misconduct occur? So those investigations are stymied, and the officer as well as the complainant enjoys responsibility to participate in that investigation so we can determine the facts of the matter and then make the appropriate decision of misconduct or not. The other aspect we have is we had quite a few, I believe in the hundreds of individuals where we initiate a complaint based on a third party's statement in a social media setting. And we're hitting a roadblock there where the people we're reaching out to are not calling us back, we're doing door knocks on their homes, they're not responding to our inquiries to determine who the victim or who the individual who's alleging the misconduct, the actual recipient of this police misconduct is, so that we can determine the facts and circumstances.
Well, and some of this on video, I assume, so at least that should be, in some cases, be helpful to find those individuals. Before we go, just quickly, Chief Moore, L.A. Police Commission looking at the legal feasibility of requiring LAPD personnel to be vaccinated. Do you support your department being fully vaccinated?
Absolutely. It saves lives of our people, the families of our people, their partners, as well as the public in which we engage in every day.
Should it be mandatory that they have to be vaccinated?
I think your last guest spoke to this nicely. Determining whether or not we can legally mandate it is the question. Secondly, is it the most appropriate blunt force strategy in order to overcome the hesitancy and the resistance? I'm very worried about a third of the organization that has not the vaccine or any antibodies, and yet we still have this virus that's very much still alive and threatening to us. And I'm hopeful that continued education and encouragement will have more of our people take advantage of this vaccine. And if it becomes a mandate, I ask that all public safety officials, fire, police, healthcare workers, all of us essentially be treated in an equal and fair manner.
Thank you so much, Chief Moore. Appreciate your being with us today on Air Talk. More to come next hour.
Support comes from Ciclovia, catalyzing vibrant public spaces, active transportation, and good health through car-free streets. Ciclovia promotes respect and infrastructure for bike and pedestrian-friendly public spaces. Enjoy these pop-up parks for the day in your favorite people-powered way. Jogging, biking, skating, strolling, or simply spectating. Free and open to all, Ciclovia Sundays generate miles of smiles in neighborhoods all over L.A. Details at www.ciclavia.org.